Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 10:25 Irish summertime. Today is October 19th, and today being Friday, it's also the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Now, today has been rather an exciting day from a number of perspectives, but primarily because Wall Street has finished so far below where it opened. The Nasdaq was down 2.65%, the S&P down 2.5%, and the Dow Jones down 2.64%. And this has really been a week in which we've seen a number of indices roll over into what at the best can be termed a consolidation, and at the worst, rolling over, possibly going back to test areas of support. Now, the S&P today closed at almost exactly 1500, just marginally above it, and that had been an area of resistance as it was making its way upwards from its mid-August lows. So, if it were to find a little bit of support here, I don't think anyone would be particularly surprised. However, there is a storm cloud out there, and it is those bank indices. When you look at the S&P 500 banks index, the regional banks, the Philadelphia Bank Index, and the diversified banks in the US, they are all looking quite ropey. Particularly that S&P 500 banks index broken downwards, the regional banks broken down from this consolidation. They've broken through those mid-August lows. It does really highlight the point that David has made quite a number of times this week, that there is a two-tier market in the US right now. There are those industries which are those companies which are focused towards the domestic economy, which are really faring quite badly because they are highly leveraged to the consumer, to the property market, and to the financial sector. And there has been obviously massive growth in the financial sector in the US over the last decade. However, there are other companies out there. Google was a tower of strength in here today. It was one of the best performers in the Nasdaq and held on to its gains. That can't be said, the same can't be said for a number of other indices, for a number of other companies in the Nasdaq. We saw Dormer Dynamics on quite a few others, particularly some of those that have led the way on the upside. So what this tells us is that there are companies that are outperforming out there. However, given the fact that so many indices globally have rolled over a bit this week, it does look increasingly likely that we are going to go through a period of consolidation here. Looking at just some of the other moves that happened this week, bond prices rallied from really where they needed to rally from. The 30-year found support at 110. It's at 113.07 at the close today, so up another full point in here today. That is certainly taking some of the pressure off of stock markets with those lower government bond yields. The other really big story this week was the dollar breaking downwards once more. And at the close, the dollar index was down 22, 23 points right now. It's under 78 at 77.35. So significant weakness once again on the dollar index. Gold and silver were a bit weaker in here today, but gold was quite strong yesterday. It's at 765 on the spot. Silver really gave up a lot of its gain in here today, but also rallied well off its lows. The low was at 1336. It closed out the day at 1363 and a half, and the high of the day was at nearly $14. So really quite a lot of volatility. What we are seeing, particularly this week, is a lot of backing and filling, particularly in the gold market, where you see it rally a couple of dollars, then you see it down a couple of dollars, rallying back up. All of this action happening on an intraday basis. And that's really quite positive. There is a bit of a battle for the soul of this bull market going on at the moment. And that is no bad thing, considering the fact that gold has broken out to new highs over the last couple of weeks and is holding on really quite well and improving on that performance. Even with all that backing and filling, is really a very bullish factor. It does mean perhaps that it will take that little bit longer for it to get into a more consistent uptrend, but it is in an uptrend nonetheless. Platinum was a little bit weaker in here today. It's only up a dollar, gave up a lot of its gains in during the day, closed pretty much in the middle of the range. But that has been the leader all the way through and is certainly performing very well at the moment. In the industrial metal complex, we had a little bit of weakness in here today. The nickel price was down 250. Lead had been considerably higher but closed up 40. And on the copper price, it was only up $1. So a little bit weak today, but during the week we've had some pretty steady gains here. Aluminium did very well today. Nickel has found support at 25,000, then found support above that at 30,000. It's at 32,250 today, and is does look it does look like it's found an area of at least medium-term support and is probably on its way back towards its highs. What we don't know is how long it's going to take to get there. Now, looking at some of our longer-term themes, it's important to bear in mind what history has taught us, and that is that particularly when you look at, I think probably one of the most important charts out there is the Dow Gold ratio, and gold is out has been outperforming the Dow Jones since 2000. In the last 100 years, there have been three major spikes in that index, and the last one peaked in 2000, and regardless of the fact that the Dow has moved to new all-time highs this year, gold is outperforming considerably. And that is another signal that we have moved into a different cycle over the last 5 years. With the events that we've had over the last month, we've had a massive injection of liquidity. And given the news that we've had coming out today with a number of companies releasing disappointing earning reports, and with stock markets giving up in excess of 2%, and general nervousness continuing even 2 months after the peak in bearishness, there is the increasing likelihood that we're going to see further rate cuts. Now, they're probably not going to happen in October, but I'm thinking more over the sort of 6 month to 9 month time horizon, we're probably going to see some further rate cuts in the USA. That is also an indication of massive amounts of liquidity being pumped into this market. I wouldn't argue with that. In fact, we were very pro the Fed lowering interest rates by a half of a percent before they did it. And the reason for that is that the credit markets had seized up entirely. And when you have a choice of whether you're going to kiss your entire economic growth goodbye versus injecting some additional liquidity, central banks are always going to veer on that side, regardless of the inflationary fears that will emerge further down the line. And of course, this isn't the first time they've done it. They started doing this a long time ago, and the Greenspan put was a term that was coined to describe it. But long-term capital management, the Asian financial crisis, the Russian debt default, the Mexican peso crisis, the Y2K furor, then you had the bursting of the Nasdaq bubble, 9/11, you had further liquidity on a lesser scale injected last May, and again between the middle of August and now. And the reason that central banks are happy to do that is because they feel that they are in a much better position to handle inflationary fears than deflationary fears. The Japanese central bank set about bursting their bubble towards the end of the 1980s, when the Nikkei was trading at 40,000, or as close to 40,000 as makes no difference. And they succeeded, and they squeezed long after they should have stopped, and they threw their economy into a deflationary spiral, which they are even today having trouble emerging from. And while I believe that the Nikkei or the Japanese stock markets have enormous room to improve, they are not showing any evidence at the moment that they're about to take over any role as in leadership. But the important point was that central bankers, smart people that they are, looked at what Japan had done. They squeezed for too long when they should have been easing, and decided that that was not going to happen in the USA. And they've been injecting liquidity at as and when it's been needed, and probably in excess of what was needed. And they have that has rescued the stock markets. And regardless of the activity that we've seen just today or over the last week, where we've seen markets rolling over in the short term, over the last 5 years, this has been a remarkable uptrend. And while it could be argued that some of those European indices, particularly because they are suffering from the strong euro, are below their highs, have failed to regain their highs from the end of July, and it could be argued that they have what we would term a type 2 reaction with some right-hand extension that was, and we define that in the chart seminar as a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, which is often followed by some right-hand extension. If you want to learn more or hear more about, or read more about that, excuse me, you can type type 1 or type 2 or type 3 into the search, or there are a number of articles in the featured article section where you can look up what we've written on those. But the let me get back to my point, which is that over the last 3 or 4 years, we've had a remarkable uptrend, and it has been fueled largely by liquidity, particularly in the USA, where we've had an enormous amount of money being pumped into the market, and it has found its way into just about every asset class, and equities in particular. So we see the Dow Jones and the S&P making new nominal all-time highs. They're underperforming commodities, and they are underperforming some of their global peer group, particularly in the emerging markets and most especially in Asia. We define the action at the moment in the US as a bear market, and that does sound a bit disingenuous because it is hitting new highs, but we define it as a bear market in terms of valuations, which is a generational-long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And PEs have dropped significantly from their all-time highs in the US, and they're probably going to fall a bit further still before they reach a low. On the other hand, we are in a secular bull market in a number of other stock markets around the world, particularly those in India and China, and a number of other Asian economies where they really are the center of economic growth in the world today, and also bull markets in a number of resource economies, which are helping to fuel the growth right across Asia. And that is having an enormous impact on the way that we invest. Because outside of those companies which can benefit from the weaker dollar or benefit from international trade, those are the companies that are going to benefit the most. Any of those domestic economies, or sorry, domestic companies in the US are going to find it much harder because the consumer is under pressure and the property market is in decline. And financial shares and financial companies are really in quite a lot of trouble at the moment. With interest rates on the verge, I think, of coming down further, that is going to be a boon for some stock markets, and those markets that can benefit from the major bull markets that are out there, those companies will do the best. Now, there is also the other major theme that we've started to develop, and that is the outperformance of technology. The Nasdaq broke upwards from a very long range against the S&P over the last couple of months, and it does look like we're going to see technology shares outperforming. But those are going to be pure technology shares, not so much the whole Nasdaq index, but the companies which will be of direct interest to economies such as China and India, where they are searching to where they are looking to get their hands on advanced technology, and there is likely to be a bull market in those companies. Now, the Nasdaq was something that I think has scarred, the Nasdaq bubble was something that has scarred a number of investors, and I remember that bubble, and I remember going to see the private bankers in Benelux for a number of years afterwards, and whenever I pulled up Cisco, I could see faces looking really quite grim because they'd bought it all the way up and they'd held it all the way back down. And that experience has damaged the psychology of a number of investors, and we've probably lost a whole generation of investors. Now, a lot more people have joined the market in the last 5 years, but they are looking at different opportunities. And the companies that survived the Nasdaq burst are solid companies making solid profits, and they can be respected, and we can probably give our faith to those companies going forward. The secular themes that we have with growth in GDP growth right across Asia is not something that is going to play its way or is going to unwind over the next couple of years. This is a secular theme. It will last for upwards of the next 20 years. When you look at the demographics of, particularly in India, where by 2020 it'll still have 60% of its population under the age of 25, that's an enormous pull on the resources of the world for infrastructure growth, and it's only just getting started in India. And in China, they are well ahead of the curve in terms of infrastructure growth, but with something I saw an enormous number, but I can't exactly remember it, so I won't quote it, but it is millions of people entering the cities every year from now and going forward for the next 10, 15, or 20 years. We're in the midst of the greatest urbanization in history, and that is an enormous pull on the resources of the world. We've already seen commodity prices, particularly the industrial metals, starting to push upwards, and a lot of them have gone to new all-time highs in nominal terms. But none of them have shown any evidence that they've reached an all-time high that is where that suggests they may actually reverse from. What they appear to look like is that they've broken upwards from their base and they have put in an enormously impressive performance. And we've seen consolidations lasting for a number of years. But what we're starting to see once more is that the entire sector is starting to strengthen up again. And that is being fueled by demand from not only China, and China was the one that hit the headlines, but it is all of the emerging economies of the world. They all have large populations, large young populations being the key term, and the infrastructure growth that they will have to put in over the next decades is will dwarf what we have done in the West. With that number of people entering the workforce and needing education and looking for their own homes and starting their own families and aspiring to the standard of living that we have in the West, that puts enormous pressure on resources, industrial metals. The growth in demand for oil products is unlikely to be met by this current supply mechanism, which points towards a secular bull market in the energy, in the raw commodity. It's rather difficult to play the oil story unless one actually buys oil futures, because a number of, well, most of the global, well, the international big, large oil companies don't actually own their own reserves. They are at the mercy of countries where their resources could be nationalized at the flick of a switch or the turn of a pen, and they can be kicked out. And it's already happened in Russia, it's happened in Angola, and it's happened in a number of countries, of course, in South America. And that is a trend which is likely to continue because countries can do it with absolute impunity. And the large companies, the large oil companies, have no choice but to go back into those countries later on if they're invited, because there is a dearth of places in the world where there are large reserves of oil. So that does point towards those large oil companies having not too great a time of it going forward, because they are likely to start having a declining reserve base very soon. The oil drillers and the service companies should do much better, because regardless of who owns the fields, they still have to drill and they will still need services. Now, Schlumberger was one of the leading was one of the leading companies on the upside. It pulled back significantly here today because of delays. I saw that news story, but over the longer term, that company's bull market is still very much intact. What has also been, I think, underrated but is increasingly coming to the fore is the upward pressure on the soft commodities. Because when per capita incomes increase, the first thing that someone does when they no longer are at the bottom level of poverty is that they eat well and they consume much more food. And this is the first time in history that we've had a demand-driven bull market in grains, because as per capita incomes increase and because and as people eat well and eat much better and consume indeed will start to consume much more meat, so that will also point towards a bull market in that particular sector. But this is the first time that it's been driven by demand. In the past, and you'll see this if you look at the longer term charts, particularly of the grains, when they rose to highs, they did so, it would be 1 year there was a drought and you would see corn or wheat or soybeans running on the upside. And the year after, because so many farmers saw the high prices, they would plant an additional amount, or they would take land from other commodities and plant the one that had gone up so well. And of course, there was an oversupply, so it would fall right back down. Now, even though wheat has gone to incredible heights over $9, it hasn't fallen back nearly as quickly as it would have in the past, because there is a supply deficit in face of this large demand. And while it could possibly come back further, it's probably not going to go right back down into its base, because there is so much demand out there. And this is against the fact that supply is constrained, that global stockpiles are at historic lows. And this is against a background as well of actually having pretty good years of growing over the last 10 years, but stockpiles have continued to decline because there is just so many more mouths to feed who can actually afford to buy the food. And that is a trend that is set to continue, because as children grow up, they eat more food. And as the demographics of the world get older, then they will also start to consume more and spend more of their income on eating well. So we have three big themes in the commodity sector, with energy, with industrial metals, and with the soft commodities, particularly the grains. And these are a corollary to the enormous infrastructure growth that and population growth, GDP growth that we're seeing right across Asia. And that GDP growth is also being seen in the performance of the stock markets in Asia, because when they do start to get the regulations right, and it's a model that has been used for the last 20 or 30 years, and actually longer than that, you have countries like Singapore, which have joined the first world, and you have Korea, Taiwan, and now we're starting to see China and India opening up, lowering trade barriers, and allowing inward investment. Now, understandably, some countries can get nervous about the amount of investment that's coming in, And they get particularly nervous when they don't know who that money is coming from, and they are much more interested in having money coming in and staying in the country. I think that is part of the reason that has motivated the Indian authorities to put these investment curbs on the participatory notes. But what they have done has riled the market somewhat over the last week, but it's certainly not going to derail, excuse me, the secular bull market in Indian equities. That is something that is likely to continue for a good many more years yet. Now, because also following the Asian financial crisis, you had a number of Asian currencies either getting pegged to the dollar or really being quite significantly undervalued. And the leading currency in the region that was devalued the most, I think, was probably the Chinese yuan. And because that is now the absolute heavyweight in that region and is gradually allowing its currency to appreciate, I've seen any number of reports saying that they're going to allow it to appreciate at a much faster rate. Personally, I wouldn't be betting on it appreciating too quickly. There is absolutely no evidence from the price charts that they're going to allow it to happen, and I haven't heard any of the Chinese officials saying that they're going to allow their currency to appreciate much faster, regardless of how many people in the West have asked them to do it, or in fact demanded them to do so. But because the yuan is gradually appreciating, it takes some pressure off of their regional competitors who are also allowing their currencies to appreciate. They have to compete with Chinese products and they want to try and sell their own products into China. So when the Chinese yuan is allowed to appreciate, it also takes the pressure off of their neighbors who are also allowing their currencies to appreciate. And indeed, India's rupee has appreciated by 11%, I think, this year. And when you look at that long-term chart in the chart library, that is a big top and or a bottom, but it looks like a top the way it's quoted. And against the dollar, the Indian rupee is going to be getting significantly stronger over the next 10 or 15 years. From an investment point of view, there is probably no better area in the world to be invested in. With appreciating currencies, appreciating stock markets, and the leaders in GDP growth, Asia is probably the place to be. Given the fact that we've got so much liquidity flowing around the world, there is quite a large potential for a bubble to develop in that region. And obviously, we would like to be there to play it, and we want to hopefully get out before it bursts. But at the moment, those stock markets are the world outperformers, and in the short term, they may move into a consolidation, but we can continue for them to expect them to find support first and rally the most when the global stock market environment is in an expansionary mode. That liquidity that's flowing around the world will find its way into equity markets. It's also finding its way into commodity markets, but it's also massively inflationary. And gold has traditionally been the store of value for generations, indeed millennia. And it does perform well in an environment where interest rates are coming down, but inflationary fears are still in the background. And that's exactly what we have right now. Gold has moved to new highs. It is backing and filling in this area, but it is definitely, it appears at least to be on an upward trajectory. Aside, of course, from the occasional downward spikes, which quite often get traded above relatively quickly afterwards, and we saw one of those just last week. But the inflationary fears are not just going to go away. And another important chart to look at is that long-term chart of government bond yields in the USA. Because in the US, you have plenty of back history, and look at the 10-year yield, because that one's got the most history. You see the entire bull market over the last 20 years, where bond prices rose and yields fell significantly. and they fell right down to 2003 where they bottomed. And that was probably the end of this disinflationary period. We're now in a new inflationary cycle, where we can expect government bond yields to gradually trend higher. Now, they're not going to make a 20-year bear market for bond prices in 1 year or even in 6 months. It's going to take time, and we're going to go through periods where you will have inflationary pressures coming to the fore and central banks being forced to be seen to act against them. And we're going to see periods just like now, which are disinflationary. Inflation is not so much of a worry, and interest rates come down. But what we can be sure of is that interest rates are not going to go right back down to where they were in 2003. And when they rise, they are most likely going to take out the highs that we saw prior to the 50 basis point cut in August. That is the formula for an uptrend in yields, where you have higher lows and higher highs. But it's a very long-term, very, very long-term pattern. And it could be another 10, 15, or maybe even 20 years before we see the high in yields and when inflation really, really does become a problem. And central bankers will have to appoint someone like Volcker, who they appointed back in the early 80s, to handle this inflationary problem. As I mentioned, they are much happier to tackle the inflationary problem because there is the perception that they know how to handle that and they can preserve growth. So, regardless of what central bankers are talking about in the short term, where they are adamant about fighting inflation, in fact, they are stoking inflation by their actions when they are supporting the market. And with particularly in the US, and the weak dollar is something that is certainly on the headlines, so I should say something about that. You have deficits, and you have the threat of growth being impacted, and the problems in the property market, which are becoming quite notorious in or have become notorious in the last couple of weeks. And with the prospect of lower interest rates, that is putting increasing pressure on the dollar. But it's not in dollar collapse mode, but it is certainly trending downwards. And it really would need an upward dynamic, and a significant dynamic at that, to break the progression of lower highs that we have right now. There is the potential that when the dollar gets to a level that is seen by its by the US as the US's partner economies, the G7 right around the world, then we could see it the we could see intervention by the central banks of the world. And if they all do that together, there's a very good chance that they'll be able to reverse the trend and the downward trend of the dollar. But over the longer term, the prospect of any central bank wanting to have a very strong currency is going against their own best interests, because in the world of globalization, there is nobody wants a strong currency beyond the medium term because of the competitive nature of globalization and those companies that will want to consolidate their earnings in their home currency. So there is a competitive devaluation going on. Now, the euro is stronger than it's ever been at the moment, but the Europeans are going to be very unlikely to want to allow their currency to become the strongest in the world for very long, and they're already complaining quite vocally. But that is a theme where we're probably going to see short to medium term trends in the major currencies of the world, the reserve currencies. But we're not going to see secular themes in that area, where they're not going to trend for 5, 10, or 15 years. On the other hand, in Asia, with the appreciating yuan and the impact that is having on the region, and with the GDP growth factored in there, that has the potential to be a secular theme, and we could see those Asian currencies appreciating for at least as long as their stock markets are doing very well, which is a very nice recipe for those of us who want to invest in that area. But with that, I apologize for the lateness of this recording for anyone who's listening in the UK or in Europe generally, but my internet connection was down for most of the evening and I couldn't record it. But thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a very great weekend.